Shkor, for everyone for coming. This whole maimed is really le'ela le'ela. And so Yisrael Shem, it should be a chus for Klai Yisrael. It should be a source to be able to bring Yeshuas and Nechamas and the Gula b'mehera. Peshus, Rabbi Mordechai, Rabbi Shachatovitz, I think. So I want to discuss the topic today is Hilchos Ribbis. And it's interesting that Hilchos Ribbis is brought in Yoredeya. It's not brought down in Choshen Mishpat. It's together with the Hilchos Kashris, Hilchos Taras HaMishpacha, because like Hilchos Ribbis is really something which covers the entire facet of life. You don't have to be a businessman to be involved in Hilchos Ribbis. Could it happen to children, teenagers, backyard camps? It could happen to housewives borrowing items back from each other. Ribbis not just by money, it's neshach kesef, neshach ochel. So there's a lot of interaction that throughout our lives that can be involved with Ribbis. But it goes without saying that in the arena of business, they're definitely, Ribbis Shalos definitely come up all the time. It used to be that most of our interaction was with Goyim, at least we thought it was. You know, we were with Goyim, and then Mimela, the Ribbis issues were not as much. But recently, with more Yidden involved in business, more Frum Yidden involved in business, and doing business with each other, and the whole infrastructure, Yiddish business infrastructure has grown. Now so many more Ribbis Shalos have come up, and all the different changes, all the evolutions of changes of business practices that are bringing up more and more new Ribbis Shalos, that it's changing by the day. It's being new Chidushim, new are coming every day. So definitely we have to. It's very important to keep these things in mind. Just want to start with a hisnatzlus, a disclaimer that the purpose of this shiur is not really to paskin Ribbis Shalos. Ribbis Shalos is extremely difficult. I remember I once was speaking to a very big book in Ribbis. He probably wrote one of the first Ribbis Svarim here in America in the 1980s. So I met him at a chasana. Thank you. And I was very interested. I called him on the phone. I spoke to him on the phone here. I met him in person. I said, can I discuss the Ribbis Shalos with you? And he said, not at a chasana. You know, it's Ribbis Shalos. I have to be sitting down and, you know, without music, without I need to, you know. So therefore, the purpose of the shiur is not the paskin shalos. The purpose of the shiur is lahayr, just to be ma'aras. What is a Ribbis Shalos? What's considered Ribbis? You know? And whenever Shala comes up, one little detail can make a difference, whether it's an Issa Deraisa on many accounts or whether it's Mutal Chatchila. So like, there's so many details that are involved in passing a Ribbis Shala. And that's why no one should ever be Madame Milson and say, well, you know, the Rav Paskin, that case, business transaction was all right, so this one would be all right. One little thing can make a difference. So just over here, just a little higher, of different shahs that could come up in Ribbis. When the Shulchan Aruch starts off Hilchos Ribbis, it uses the lashon ma'od ma'od, the Torah in the Shulchan Aruch, that ma'od ma'od, says ma'od twice, that how he have to be careful of inyoni Ribbis. The Shulchan Aruch only uses that lashon to my knowledge at one other time, and that's by being misrachik from nashim. It says ma'od ma'od, you have to be misrachik from nashim. Like, it's just like there's a sort of saying, we all know that attraction when it comes to Nashim, it seems to be there's like this natural attraction to Ribbis. It's Geshmak Ribbis. And therefore, Ma'od Ma'od, you have to be very, very stark when it comes to Inyani Ribbis. The Torah asks Ribbis over and over again, there could be 5 up to 6 lavin that a malva lender could be over in a Ribbis transaction. The chiddush of the Torah is machadish, that even a lova, who's sort of say the victim, but when we see a victim is over and over, even the lova has a intrinsic iser of ribbis, besides leaf neiver issues. And the reason given why even the victim, we don't see that the nigzol is over anything, and why, you know, because The Torah goes out of its way that it's so, because it's such a regilis to be involved in ribbis, the Torah had to like be machmir even on the side of the lova to put a hold and a halt to inyoni ribbis. That's what the svarim say. One of the lavim of ribbis is losa simun, and that is to be like involved in a business transaction. And from there, Chazal tell us that even if it's not the malva, not the lova, not the lender, the borrower, but it's it could be the orev, the co-signer who was guaranteeing, who's the guarantor. It could be the sofer, the one that's involved in writing out the contracts for it. They could also be over an intrinsic iser of losa simun, of a ribbis. And there's also lifnei iver issues. Anyone involved in this business transaction, it could be the lawyers, it could be the broker, all different employees involved in getting this transaction to the table. Sometimes it'd be losa simun, but at least it would be a lifnei iver issue. And that's why one has to really be very careful. I've gotten these emergency calls in the middle of the day, where a person said, you know, they've been working on a deal for a long time, and finally when they came to the table, found out that both parties are Jewish. They weren't from, but both parties are Jewish. And it's loaded with ribbis and everything over here. Like, what does he do? He was just like a broker, just one of the many people involved, but, it made it so. One has to always ask shailas. Again, there's always more details involved. But to be very, very careful about it, because even if you're dealing with two people that are not from, but lemaisa, if they're yidden or they're two yidden, there's an issur ribbis between them. One has to always be careful before you sign any type of contract. You know, you come to the table and you're signing this contract and that. You know, you read them, you didn't read them. Sometimes you might be signing something which has ribbis in it. You're not assuming it's going to play out, you know, so maybe it wasn't on your radar, but you signed a ribbis contract. It's something that one has to be very, very careful about, just to make sure what you're signing. It's always important to know what you're signing, but some things, okay, you're willing to take a chance and assume everything will be all right, but some things, you might be signing your name to something which is a ribbis transaction. So one has to be very, very careful about that. There's a mitzvah to return ribbis that was collected by Isser, just like there's a mitzvah of a heshev zagazela. There's a similar, although not exactly the same, a mitzvah of v'cheach hechimach to return ribbis that if ribbis was collected by Isser, you have to, there's a mitzvah to give it back to the lova. Different details about that, but so that's something to keep in mind. Even if, say, it was done already, and said, okay, if a falun is done already, you know, I'll be careful next time. But if you have money on you that's ribbis, you have a mitzvah say to return it. Okay, there are details exactly to go into that, but you have a mitzvah say to return the money. It's similar to v'heishiv v'zagazelim. Now, the issur of ribbis, as we all know, though I can't say it's 100, you know, it's not as simple as it seems, but it doesn't involve goyim, meaning if we lend to goyim, borrow from goyim, Lemaisa, there's no issur of ribbis. And that is, so it comes up when you have a corporation, you have a business that has many, many either owners, stockholders, and goyim and yidden. And so how do you look at it? You know, am I doing business? Is this a loan? Is it a transaction with yidden or is it goyim? And this became a big issue. The whole idea of at least a modern-day corporation is relatively new, from the beginning of the 1900s. But either way, the idea of a partnership having many owners and banks, that already existed in Europe in the 1800s. And the question came, who is the real owner over here? Do we look at the Yidim or Goyim? Most poskim came out, and that's how we're generally knowing, that you look at the majority. If the majority of the owners are yidden, then we look at it as a unit. I'm doing business with a yid. And vice versa, if the majority of the owners are a goy, then I'm doing business with a goy. And it doesn't make a difference who the CEO is and the members of the board and whatever it is. We're talking about the owners. Who are the owners of this particular business? And so we go Basar Rav. And there are other details. I'm oversimplifying everything over here, but that's the basic concept that we're working with. Now, so one has to be very careful, especially today. It's always been an issue, but we're finding out more and more, to our surprise, how many even large national, international companies are really owned by Yidden. Most of the owners are Yidden, or it's a family-owned, it's private. And I guess we shouldn't be so surprised. I mean, how Yidden have really, you know, we're a minority, but temamat. But we as we all know from history, we get involved in things throughout the world, people have been aware of, to our surprise, how many major companies are really owned by Yidden halachically. And whether it's, you know, different brokerage accounts, you know, banks, funding corporations, whatever it might be, one has to be very, very careful that whoever's servicing it, really the owner of this money, have to make sure that they're not goyim, that they're not yidden, rather. There is, in fact, now information available now. There's even a service that you could look up. And they help you realize, you put the company in, and they'll tell you, you know, whether it's Goyish owned or not, or exactly the different details that go into the ownership of the company. And that's something to keep in mind. Around, I don't know, over 15 years ago, there was an accountant in town who publicized that right here on Reistown Road, there's around five or six of these small, sort of say, Hamish of banks, family-owned banks, that were owned by Yidden. They just drive down Reistown Road, and like all these banks, most of them were owned by Yidden, family owned. You know, Mamish fully, or certainly majority was owned. You know, the ownership of each bank was owned by Yidden, and that surprised people. People had accounts at these banks. We all assumed that your average bank was Goyish owned, and so again, that's something to be careful about. There's a Yid by the name of Aaron Solomon, who he seems to be, I don't know if he was the first, but he seems to be one of the first people who established this concept of a corporation. A corporation where there's no personal liability. He lived in England, and he was machadish this, and even went to the court in England, and they had to like define what is a corporation. And it's interesting, it took a Yiddish cup to machadish this concept, you know, of a corporation, l'chora. But, the shaila came up, the company's nogea, how to look at a corporation in all of halacha. But let's discuss when it comes to ribbis here, Hilchos ribbis. So Hilchos ribbis, if a loan is given, you're not allowed to charge ribbis. You can't charge interest on a loan. The regular standard loan that the discussed in what the Torah refers to, what's discussed in Chazal, is where there's personal liability. There's recourse. You know, you could almost take him and gleam of a dollar, you could take the shirt off his back, you know, almost literally. And, you know, that he has personal liability for this loan. So what a corporation does, you give a loan to a corporation. When the lova is a corporation, when the borrower is a corporation, there's no personal liability. And the question is, when it comes to ribbis, we're not discussing other halachas, when it comes to ribbis, maybe a loan to a corporation doesn't have the halachas of ribbis. Maybe ribbis only by a regular loan, standard loan, that has personal liability to it. So this became a whole discussion, already started in Europe. But Rav Moshe speaks about it, and it's known as like Rav Moshe's Kiddush, so he was not the first and only one to say it. But he wanted to be Machadish that giving a loan to a corporation, even a Jewish-owned corporation, even to an LLC, assuming there's no personal liability at all, you have to be very careful about that, assuming there's no personal liability at all, that a loan of that nature will not have an issue of a ribbis to it. And you have to be very careful. Only when the borrower is a corporation, if the lender is a corporation to someone, to a private person with personal liability, then of course that's a full-fledged issa d'oraisa loan. But if the borrower is a corporation, Moshe said there's no issa ribbis at all. If a corporation were, you know, that doesn't have any personal liabilities, no issa ribis at all. So many were donned on this kiddush. Some argued it went mina kotsa la kotsa, and hell it was an issa daraisa. Others held that they agree that it went down from a daraisa, but it's not mutter, still be an issa drabanan. And it's an ongoing discussion till today. And one has to ask their personal rav, you know, how should they be knowing? You know, many try to be careful and not be somech on this heter, and you know, only use it as a tzirif in certain types of cases. And you know, but that's a shiloh, which again, this is beyond the scope of this year, that one has to ask and know that you know, when should they rely on it or not. But many do try to work, you know, either with your heteriska or other ways, to try not to be somech on it, and but that's something one has to ask their personal rav about. But again, it has to be very careful. And people, when you know, not knowing the lumdus behind Rav Moshe's chiddush, people confuse between a malva and a lova. You know, they think anything involved a corporation is fine. It's only when the lova is a corporation does Rav Moshe, does Rav Moshe's psak apply. Now, a lot of times there are loans that person would never even realize that it's a loan, or realize that there, you know, that there's a loan with ribbis. Sometimes there's internal loans within a family. A father, there's a trust under the son's name, and the father or some relative borrows money from that trust with ribbis, and kind of not realizing that there's a transaction between him and his son. You know, and you're thinking, well, it's really our father's money, and it's under his umbrella, and it's under his control. But no, I mean, again, I'm not getting involved in the idea of the trust and everything now. But just Bosirak Lahoy, you have to be careful that he's not taking out his own money, taking out his son's money. I once had a case. There is someone who is very, very careful in ribbis. He would write heter iskas for everything. He would come and running to me, make sure he got a heter iska for this and that. Whenever he borrowed money, family members, non-family members, he would always be careful to write a heter iska. So one time he came to me, and when he called me, he said, I can't believe it. I borrowed money from my wife. She had her own personal fund. He had no shaifas to. I borrowed money from my wife, Beribis. his own wife. He's so careful when he borrowed from Shmerel and from Beryl and everyone else, and his cousin, and his, he always careful about writing right ahead to risk. His own wife, he just kind of thought it's all the same money, but not realizing that at least the way those accounts were set up, it was her personal money. It doesn't really work like that, but that's something to be careful about. You could catch a person off guard. Sometimes you'll have a single person who's he's managing different LLCs. They seem to be, it's all the same, you know, ownership on these LLCs, LLC A, LLC B, and he's managing these LLCs. And he himself will borrow money. A will borrow money from B. And he's managing both. He just, you know, and do it with ribbis, say sometimes legally you have to, you know, they're IRS, I think they require you to, you know, borrow the money with interest or whatever it might be, not realizing that there really are two separate parties. Because yes, maybe some of the partners overlap and own both of those LLCs, but there's other partners that own A and only own B, or vice versa, and therefore ends up being that they're really two separate entities, two separate people. And so he's managing all together, and say most of the owners own both together, but you're not realizing that no, it really ends up being that to a good extent, they're really two separate people. And that's something to also be careful about. And these are things one has to ask a shiloh about. A lot of times a person gives money for an investment. Okay, regular investment. He goes and invests with someone. That by itself so far should be all right. Sometimes a person, then the person is told he's going to get, there's, you know, guaranteed returns. Okay. So still, you know, generally speaking, so far, it could still be all right if it's just a pure investment and there's no achrayus on the one that is actively investing the money. He's just investing it for you. But then there are times where he does take achrayus in the money, different levels of achrayus in the money. Sometimes it could really be that it's more than just an investment. It's a loan or a partial loan, and it's called an investment, but by right, there could still be some aspect of alone there. And these are all things that, again, these are details are beyond the scope of this shiur, but one has to be very careful about that, that some of these, there are loans without even realizing it. There are other cases that, based on Shulchan Aruch, one doesn't realize that they're even borrowing or lending money. For example, say someone wants to take a loan from a bank, and they themselves, you know, due to their, they don't have enough credit or whatever it is to take the loan from the bank. So someone takes a loan out for them on their name. It could be a father for their son, and the son, for example, he's going to be paying all the monthly payments, the amortized payments, so I'll be, you know, paid by the son. But in halachic eyes, being that the bank doesn't know about who the son is, they're only dealing with the father. We look at it as the father is borrowing that money from the bank with ribbis. It's a goyish bank, that's fine. And he's really now taking that money and lending it to his son with those same terms of ribbis. And the son is really paying the father's ribbis to the bank. But it's not a loan from the bank to the son. It's a loan from the bank to the father and the father to the son. Ends up being as two separate loans, and each one is with ribbis, and that's a major, major shaila. And the same shaila plays out when borrowing a credit card. When you borrow someone else's credit card, and it's his name is on the credit card, and you buy with it, and the payment is going to be due, you know, in a way that ribbis will accrue, interest will accrue. You're not planning to pay it till later, whatever it might be. Or that's just the way it played out. So we don't look at it that you're borrowing money from the one that's using the credit card. He's not borrowing it from Visa. Visa is giving the money to the one whose name is on the credit card, and he is in place giving you that money with those same terms as charging your ribbis. You could do it without charging the ribbis, but if you're charging ribbis, then that's going to be an issue. It's two separate loans. It's Visa and American Express to you and from you to the one who you lent your card to. It's two separate loans. This also could play out as a very complicated shaila when a father takes out a mortgage to help his son buy a house. Again, there's a lot of details over here, but this could be a major, major ribbish shaila. Because if you look at the house, is now, you know, being, he's really not buying the house for himself, he's buying it for his son. So now it's his son's house. And the son's going to be paying the monthly mortgage payments. So again, that the bank only knows about the father, not about the son. There's very good reason to look at it, that the bank is lending, is giving a mortgage to the father, and the father is now giving that mortgage to the son. And the son is like buying the house, sort of say, from the father. And we have a major ribbish shaila. It's very complicated, all different ways of looking at it and everything. But these are all shailas that one has to ask, because they could really be running into a very, very serious ribbis issue very innocently. I didn't even think that I'm doing anything wrong. Another way that a person could not realize that he's becoming a malva is when a person co-signs on a loan. Even the loan is a friend of his getting a loan from a bank, a goyesha bank with ribbis, and he co-signs for him. That means if he's late on a certain payment or whatever, the bank has the ability to ask the orev, the co-signer, the guarantor, to pay that money and to make that payment that with, you know, the principal and ribbis, whatever the payment is. And now he goes back, which halachically he's able to do, that whenever an orev pays for the lover, he has a right to now be reimbursed from the lover. So in halachic eyes, we look at it, when the bank comes to the cosigner and says, you know, Shmuel didn't pay, it's been many months already, we're coming to you, so okay, I'll write out the check and pay. Now we look at it that you have given a loan to the lover now. And now that's with those same terms, that it's the principal with ribbis, with interest, that you paid the bank, and now by paying the bank, you have given a loan to the lover who was late in his payments. You could specify that it won't be for the ribbis, for ribbis, just the principal. You know, you have to get, these are details. But not only that, but according to many Rishonim, from the onset, from when you became an Erev, you already, the Isser of Losa Simon already existed, even though it might not even play out yet. It might not, but the mere fact that you became a co-signer, hoping that, you know, everything will be fine, but you co-signed to a loan with Ribbis, the Isser already begins then, even before you had to actively pay for that missed, you know, those delinquent mortgage payments. So one has to be very careful about being an Erev. Are there ways to work it out? There are ways to work it out, you know, but these are shalos that have to be asked. Now, what is Ribbis? Chazal defined Ribbis. And Ribbis is agar natar, is haskaras mos. You're renting out money. We never really think about that. That's, you know, you rent out a car, you rent out an appliance. Person rents out real estate, and when you rent out something, there's monthly payments, for example, weekly payments, but it accrues every hour, every minute that the item is renting out. The rental fee is grows, and you only pay at the end. Okay, but Lamaisa, every second there is the renting clock is moving. It's renting out. That's what happens by a rental. Same when you rent out money. I give you a loan of $1,000, 10% interest. Every second, that 10% is accruing. And that's what's happening, and that's what the Torah asked, that you can't rent out money. So the question comes up, what about a late fee, a penalty? If you don't pay this loan up in 30 days, you know, by the first of the month, then there's a, you know, percentage, a certain amount, the late fee. In a way, that's not renting out money, because if you pay at 11:59 p.m. before the deadline, you don't owe a penny. If you pay at 12:01, then you owe that 8.7%, you know, $37 or whatever it is, and then now you. So by right, it doesn't have the lumdus of it shouldn't be a. It really shouldn't be considered ribbis. But the poskim says, brought down in Shulchan Aruch, is still an issur d'rabbanan, that to charge a late fee on a loan, although it's not mamish ribbis, but it's still an issur d'rabbanan. Because of that, we are more makel that if there is a loan, and there is no, this loan came for like derech meko chamemko, there wasn't any real exchange of money. For example, there are services. Someone serviced you. You know, you hired a lawyer. You went had a dentist appointment, a doctor's appointment, and now they bill you. They send you a bill, and this could be the person who does the landscaping for you, a foreign person, a Jewish person that does land. They send you a bill. And it says on the bill that, you know, if you're delinquent, then there's a penalty. So there you do owe him money. You know, you owe him money. He serviced you. You owe him money. He painted your house. He mowed your lawn. He did orthodontic work for you, whatever. You owe him money. But there's no exchange. That loan didn't come from exchange of money. It wasn't that he gave you $1,000. So in that type of case, we're mako that a one-time late fee is allowed. Now, but that's only a one-time late fee. And if it's a knas hamisrabe, and if it's a constant fee that for every week that you're late, for that same payment you have to pay more and more and more, and it grows and accrues, a knas hamisrabe, and this can happen by paying a late for a rent, and a regular rental apartment, whatever it is, a knas hamisrabe is usur, or even a chashash deraisa, on a kanas ha-misrabe. And I remember the first Heter Iska I ever wrote, I was still living in Eretz Yisrael, was for a doctor who wanted to collect, people were not paying him, people in Chutz La'aretz were not paying him for his services, and he wrote up a Heter Iska to cover the kanas ha-misrabe. This is what his Heter Iska that was... that he wrote for that. And you have to be very careful. A lot of times you'll see on the bill, it will say, you know, a late fee. And sometimes it's a kanas hamisrabe, and a lot of times the professional, the doctor, whatever, he doesn't even know. You know, he hires someone to take care of the finances and the running of his business, not realizing he's charging ribbis. So by a pure loan, a one-time late fee is usur. If it's just, if no exchange of money, a one-time late fee is mutter, but if it's kanas hamisrabe, then it's always going to be usur. So now, we all know that there's ribbis deraisa and ribbis drabanan. You know, ribbis katsutsa, that it was prearranged ribbis from the onset of the transaction. Ribbis was already set into place. That's deraisa, where it was not prearranged. Just later on, the lover on his own decided to add in some money, pay some extra. That's ribbis drabanan, in a nutshell. That's the ribbis katsutsa and avak ribbis, which we say is that's ribbis drabanan. So throughout the course of the loan, the term of the loan, and there are times even before and afterwards, but certainly during the course of the loan, the term of the loan, the lova is not allowed to go out of his way to do favors for the malved, where those favors are clear that it's because of the loan. You know, to offer him something, to give him presents, to do things for him for a cheaper price, to do favors for him, whatever it is. And so I don't want to get into details there, but one has to always be very careful that when you borrow money, you have to be careful not to do any favors that are halachic issues of avak ribbis. Certain things are allowed, but you know, you have to really ask a shaila what's allowed and what's not. And for the lova to allow the malva to use his property, to use his house for a vacation for free, to use his car for free, whatever. It all depends on the case. There are times where it's usur, times where it's mutter, but these are shailas that one has to be very, very careful about. The examples. There are other examples of ribbis where, again, there's no exchange of money. It's ribbis derech mekoch hamemker, as we discussed before, where, and that's, for example, if a person sells something on credit. So one sells it, the buyer bought it on credit. Whenever you sell something on credit, you're giving the buyer a loan. You know, because he took the item home, he didn't pay for it. He gave him a loan. It's a loan, derech mekoch hamemker. There's no real exchange of money, but that's a loan. And has it has many of the regular halachas of a loan. And one is not allowed to go and charge the buyer more money because he's buying it on credit. If you pay now, and to go and tell you, if you pay now, it's X amount of money. If you pay in a month, or if there's an installment plan, then it's X plus. If you go and tell him these two prices and you're charging him more for paying later, that means you're charging him more because you gave him a loan. And so that's something that one has to be very careful about. In that type of case, the mocher, the seller, is the malva, and the buyer is a lova. And then there are cases where the buyer pays in advance, and he's giving the seller a loan. When you pay in advance, in early bird specials, whatever it might be, in essence, what you're doing is giving the person a loan because you haven't gotten anything for it. So I'm not going to get it. I'm not going to receive the product, the items for weeks, months, and I'm paying for a service in advance, paying for an item in advance. I give him a loan. If he gives me a cheaper price, he says, you know what? Because you early bird discount, you gave me the money in advance. I'm going to give you a. I'm going to give you a discount. So that's a ribbis issue because you gave him a loan. Because of that, he gave you a discount. In that type of case, the seller is the lova. It's important to know who is the lova, who is the malva, because if one wants to apply like the issues of use the corporation heter over here, you have to know who is the lova, who is the malva, and if you want to, you apply the heter of corporation. So these are all, there's a lot of details that go into all these. Again, Basi Rak Lahayr, these are just some basic inyan and nogeya to ribbis. So now I want to discuss for a few minutes about heteriska. We all know heteriska is a way of making a loan with Rebbe is mutter. It's what's really happening is we're changing a loan into an investment. And a full investment, with a partnership, but either way, it's changing a loan into an investment. That's what it happens, changing a halva into an iska. And hundreds of years ago, it was the concept of iska is discussed in Chazal, but of changing a loan into an iska, that concept was established several hundred years ago as like a legal loophole. And it's evolved, the whole different heter iskas have evolved over the years with different business practices and exactly how to do it and for the different details about it. But it's not magic. Like it doesn't just, you sign your name to heter iska and everything is mutter. It doesn't work like that. And there are times where the things are not covered by heter iska. For example, sometimes when a person is a partner in a business, and he lends his personal money to the partnership, to the business where he's a partner with someone else. And so for reasons beyond the scope of the shir, being that it's internal, it's his money to his own business, he's on both sides of the table, we're together with his partner, and it's not always pashut that a heter iska is going to work in that scenario. Not everything is covered by a heter iska. These days it's very common that there's prepaid interest. Interest is already paid even before the loan was given or right when the loan is given. There's points that are charged, which points really is a fancy name for a ribbis, for interest, and that are paid right away. And the whole idea of the heter iska is that we need time for profits to accrue, and therefore the payment is really in place of those profits, to make I'm oversimplifying it. But if the business didn't start yet or just started 5 seconds ago, like what is the what's accruing yet? You know, so how can you have an investment with profits when the investment barely even started yet, and you're already paying what's supposed to be sort of say in place of the profits? So that's why all those are not naturally covered by heter iska. There are ways to design a special heter iska for that. Sometimes he pays late, loan with the heter iska, there's a late payment, and there's a default rate. If you pay late, then it's a different rate than the regular rate of the loan of the heter iska. So that's not naturally covered. You know, that doesn't say that in the heter iska. It only doesn't cover for a different rate. It only has one rate in there. Again, all this has to be worked out. But people just sign this, go online, get a heter iska, sign it. Certainly the Chachma Zadam, Kitshach Hanar's heter iska is not going to be covering these things. You need another heter iska does not work lamafreya. As far as rearage, it's not going to go if already interest accrued, and now suddenly, let's write a heter iska, already into the loan. It doesn't cover things, I'm afraid. So heter iska is not magic. And the Chofetz Chaim writes that when you have a loan with heter iska, be very careful that the heter iska is written carefully and kedin. First of all, it's very important that both parties understand what's happening. It's a shaila whether it's ma'akiv or not, but really both parties have to realize what's happening here. What type of investment is it? What are the details of this investment? It involves an oath. It involves an exception for a shvur for an oath. I mean, you have to realize what's happening. And it involves a certain amount of the nemonis, the trust that's put into it, that's set up. But you have to realize what type of investment we're dealing with. It's really upsetting that we're in the professional world when people are ready to get for a transaction, large or small transaction, how all the lawyers are involved and you cross your T's and dot your I's, and so much work is put into making sure the contracts are accurate and everybody agrees everything, all the parties at the table, and so on and so forth. And then like the day before this transaction, person says, I forgot, we need a heter iska, and just Just, you know, make a copy and sign it and, without realizing what it is. It might not even cover this particular transaction. Plus, you don't even know what's involved. And if you're putting time and effort into the transaction, you have to put at least equal time and effort to that the transaction is to the hetairisca part of the transaction. There's a bank here in town, which happens to be the adjacent bank to this property. Several years ago, someone wanted to take it's I don't know what it is now, but in those days it was owned by a Jewish family owned bank. And someone wanted to borrow money, and he spoke to them about a hetairisca, and they were open to hearing about it. And they gave them a hetairisca, and they said, our lawyer has to go over it. So the lawyer came back, and I was involved in the case. And the person told me, he said, well, the lawyer looked at it. He says, everything was fine, so I got a little optimistic. Except for, like, there's just two or three words, that you know, one line there that the lawyer wants to just adjust. I say, what line was that? And that was the key line of the hetairisca. Like, that was the line that changed it from a loan to an investment. Like, the key line. And in a way, I was impressed because the lawyer knew, he understood hetairisca. He knew exactly how the hetairisca worked. He knew exactly why it was not a loan, it was an investment. And that's what he was concerned about coming from, you know, from his angle. And I said, and it was upsetting that, you know, how come Yidden themselves use hetairisca without realizing what's happening? Here, this lawyer, you know, wants to be responsible. You know, he caught on. He knew exactly how it was worked, and that's why he didn't want to use hetairisca. It did not play out. You know, they did not want to take the chance of having this loan only be an investment. But nevertheless, so it's very important to understand it. The part of a hetairisca, or a standard hetairisca, is that there's schar tircha. Is that the lender gives the borrower money to pay him because he's the active partner in this investment. He has to get paid for his work. Otherwise, it could be a ribis issue. And Chazal were mako that, generally speaking, you could just pay him for a small amount of money. They could just give him a dollar, and that's why in many hetairiscas it says, I will pay him. For his efforts, his work. Some hetairiscas have it built into the hetairisca itself, so you don't have to literally give a dollar, but he is being reimbursed for his, you know, in the way the payment plan is done. You know, again, but there's all different ways of doing it. Either way, it has to be written in the hetairisca, and it has to be play out too. You have to give the person the dollar. So remember, this happened like 25 years ago. I had two B'nai Torah, and they came to me, and Reuven was lending money to Shimon. And so they said, oh, you know, just, you know, we've been using hetairisca over the years, and Shimon was investing it and everything. So I just want to run the hetairisca by you. So I saw it. I saw, you know, it came from a very chashuv rav. But that phrase, I said, you know, it looks a little shorter than the regular hetairisca. Like, that phrase was taken out about the dollar. So I said, is this what the original copy was? Or, you know, there was something happened here? Is there a reason why it's missing? He says, oh, yeah, we saw that there. You know, we're dealing with tens of thousands of dollars, $20,000. Beni Yuvain, what's $1 between us? Beni Yuvain Chamahi. We took it out of the hetairisca. That's a puzzle hetairisca. And according to the Shulchan Aruch, you can't collect any interest at all if that line is not written in the hetairisca. It affects the entire transaction, so that's why it's because they. And then afterwards they got the lesson. I sat down with both of them and spent, you know, over half an hour just explaining how hetairisca works. And they had no musik of it. Two people both learned in yeshiva, probably both even learned b'metzia, but had no idea of what they're dealing with. So that's something to keep in mind. There are many types of hetairiscas that are out there. It used to be, and it still is, that when you're dealing with non-firm people, sometimes you have to use more concise, condensed hetairiscas that don't get into so many details because they might not go for it. Sometimes you're just happy that they sign their name and they agree and whatever it says there, and you know, it's and okay. And But in a way, that's like a bitty of it. It's a bitty of it when it's not a... the more that's written out, everybody knows what it's about, what we're dealing with. And certainly when two firm people are doing a transaction together, you know, they should really have a full heteriska that says that everything that's there is in front of their eyes. And there are many different heteriskas out there. It's two main differences in the types of heteriskas. There are those that are a partnership, paga milva paga pikoron type investment, and there's a full investment that Reuven is giving money for Shimon to invest, and Shimon is just Shimon has no part in the profits at all. It's called kulo pikoron, and there are milas and chasonas to each. The standard one has always been paga milva paga pikoron. Around 60 years ago, this concept of kulo pikoron came up, of a new type of heteriska. So again, each one has its malas and chesronos, both practically and halachically. And one should really discuss with the rav. And you go online and get a heteriska, you know, you have to realize what type are you getting. You know, and it makes a difference also with the details of it and understanding what it is. Many times, besides the heteriska, there's a regular promissory note or legal note, contract, which is full of ribbis and everything in it. You have to make sure that the heteriska overrides the legal contract, and that everything there is, even though it says interest and loan, everything is really just means iska and profits and so on and so forth. And that there's different ways of doing that, either writing something on the contract itself or writing on the heteriska. For example, this heteriska says, that in event of any conflict between the terms of this ISKA agreement and terms of any other agreement, you know, that the heteriska prevails. The lawyers don't like that lashon, but you have to write something to show that the heteriska is really what's running the show here. And now, by right, again, if two firm people dealing with their own lawyers and doing it together, ideal is to fuse the contract into heteriska. Like, Why have like a secular contract and then the religious contract that we're going to override? Really make it all into one. Sometimes you can't do that for legal reasons, but if you could really make it that the contract is the heteriska and blend it into one, that's really the ideal thing to do. And now that we have the more firm people working together, there are many times we're able to do that. Every transaction has so many details to it. And all the different details and different payments and different rates and everything, the more that's written in the heteriska, the better, because it really has to be covered by the heteriska. And that's why, by right, many people should try to have a custom-made heteriska. A lot of times people come to me, and I ask them what's the transaction about, and I give it, and as I give them, the basic one I say, but, go and speak to your secretary, whatever, change this line over here, add this over here, I write in different things, adjust it. This is the standard thing, but you have to adjust it to fit exactly what your transaction is all about. Now, heteriskas are not just for pure loans, where there's exchange of money. You could also write a heteriska for selling something on, buying on credit, prepayment discounts, even Derech Mekor Chememker, there are heteriskas that stores could do and merchants could do. It's a different type of heteriska than your standard lashon, because there's no real exchange of money. But there are heteriskas that one could do for that. And now, just to end off, in 1924, the Admor Melublin of the time of Israel, Meir Eger Zatzal, after his love of Klal Yisrael and realizing how so many people were nichshol in ribbis, he wanted to introduce a concept of a heteriska klali, a general heteriska that sort of say on like any time of the year, like Erev Rosh Hashanah, like just same thing with your Hataras Adarim, you make a declaration or even sign something that any transaction that you're going to be doing throughout your whole life, for the next year, whatever it is, will be covered by the guidelines of so-and-so heteriska. Tremendous kula, that you could just do that and it will cover all your transactions and everything. It became a big deal amongst the gedolim Can you do such a thing like that? Can you make like a moda? We have a moda we do after our Torah Sedarim that Chazal discuss. Can you do the same thing like a Gabi Choshimishbud or Yoredeya type thing, Nogea to Ribbis and transactions? And there are pros and cons. Even Rav Aaron Cutler has a tshuva about it. He was very young at the time. A little bit later, he had written a tshuva on it. There are those that disagreed with Alpi Halacha. There are those that disagreed Alpi Hashkafa. They thought that maybe, you know, if you just sign off like that, people are never going to relate to Inyoni Ribbis. Lamaisa, it wasn't a skabel. But the concept that he had of having a general Heter Iska was accepted on a smaller in a smaller practice, and that is like just for a bank, a company, an institution, an LLC to have a Heter Iska Klali. And therefore, instead of having to write a separate Heter Iska for every single person you do business with, there is a way to have a general Heter Iska for your business. It has to be publicized. Whether if you have an office and people come to office, it has to be there. Now things are done online, so it has to be publicized exactly like you go into Eretz Yisrael and this big giant Heter Iska Klali is in the bank. You walk into the main, right where the tellers are in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, you have this big giant Heter Iska Klali there. Everybody sees it. And also written on the contract, it says this is based upon a Heter Iska. Obviously, it's ideal to write a separate Heter Iska for every single person, but a person has to know how the business works. Sometimes something things could slip or whatever, and it is better to have this like Heter Iska Klali, which could be very, very helpful. And one has to discuss with the Rav how to do that. This one that I mentioned with the doctor is a Heter Iska Klali, and was hung up in his office and was advertised to all his clients. So this is just a general overhaul of Inyoni Ribbis as the Haftorah this week's Haftorah ends at Tzion b'mishpat tipoda v'shaveh b'stoka. The Yitz Hashem, the discourse of being medactic in these halachas and having emes and having proper mishpat. We should talk to be zocher to the Bina Beis Hamikdash Meher v'Amein. Gracious Goroch for coming.